last class, even though we did up to 30th sloka, sloka 39, I didn't complete quite a bit, even though I went to slokas 40 and 41. So sloka 38, dhumrena vriyate vannihi yatha darsho malena cha yatolbe navruto garbaha tatha teneda mavrutam. So Krishna, he is giving an analysis of kama in this shloka. What does kama do? Tena idam avritam. Tena means kamena. By that kama, idam. Idam refers to idam jnanam. This discriminative power, this viveka shakti, avritam is covered. So by kama, by desire, this discriminative ability is covered. So that's what he said. And for this covering, Krishna gave three examples. Just as the smoke covers the fire, and just as the dust covers a mirror, and just as the womb covers the child is not seen as long as it is in the womb of the mother. So now in the first example, the smoke can be removed relatively easily. You can just blow it off. You can remove it easily. Only we have to blow it a little bit. It is not a big solid problem. Whereas in the second example, the dust may not go away that easily. It has settled in the mirror. Adarshaha means mirror. Malena cha. Malena means by dirt. By dirt or any of those bad things. Tata avriyate. It is enveloped. It is enveloped so. So we have to use a little more force. It may not just get blown away. You may have to take a cloth and wipe it, or you may have to use some detergent. So it will little bit more pressure to be used to remove that dirt. Some cases, you know, we may have to use a wet cloth, all those things you can use. So still some cases we may have to use even an acid to remove, muriatic acid. If you want to prepare a concrete surface, you have to put muriatic acid. So depending on what the dirt is, you have to use force or any of those instruments. A little bit stronger effort is needed. So the third one is what? Third one is the womb covering the child. Garbaha. Garbaha means the embryo. Ulbena. Ulbena means by the womb or the placenta. Tata avriyate. It is enveloped. So here we cannot do anything. We cannot blow it away or we cannot wipe with a cloth. We have to wait for 10 months. There is no choice. The 10 months has to be waited. We have to wait. So some time is necessary. Only by time alone this cover can go. So certain kind of problems can go only with time. So in some people, especially some types of desires, whatever you do, they don't go. Whatever you may say, those desires still, they are all firmly rooted there. They don't go. So they have to go, they have to enjoy, they have to go to the society, get all these kinds of kicks and that all the time, and then only they will learn over a period of time. It will not that go that easily at all. So this is the third example. So finally he will say, I have suffered enough, it is enough, I want to get out of this. So he has to learn it by himself only over a period of time. So according to the level of maturity of the person, Krishna chose three examples in the 38th shloka. So 39th shloka is what I did not complete in the last class, even though we went ahead with 40 and 41. So we will do 39 again. I gave only the substantial meaning at that time. We'll go through the discussion. Avritam jnanametena.
Avritam jnanametena. Avritam jnanametena.
Jnanino nitya vairina.
Jnanino nitya vairina. Jnanino nitya vairina.
Avritam jnanametena. Jnanino nitya vairina.
Avritam jnanametena. Jnanino nitya vairina. Avritam jnanametena. Jnanino nitya vairina.
Kama rupena kaunteya.
Kama rupena kaunteya. Kama rupena kaunteya.
Dushpurenalanena cha.
Dushpurenalanena cha. Dushpurenalanena cha.
Kama rupena kaunteya. Dushpurenalanena cha.
Kama rupena kaunteya. Dushpurenalanena cha. Kama rupena kaunteya. Dushpurenalanena cha.
So in the previous shloka, Krishna did not say explicitly that the intellect or the discriminative power is covered by kama. He did not say it explicitly, only we interpreted that way. Krishna only used the pronoun. He said, this is covered by that. Tena idam avritam. That's what he said. Tena idam avritam. And for that tena, we said it should be kamena. We said idam, this idam jnana. That's what we said, but he didn't say it explicitly. But here, Krishna clarifies those pronouns. This means discrimination, and that means what? Desire. That's what he is trying to tell in this shloka. This is covered by that. That's what he said there. Here we are trying to understand what is this and what is that. This discrimination is covered by that desire, by that kama. That's what we are interpreting now. Krishna is making it clear. So, jnanam is the meaning of idam. When he uses the pronoun idam, it is jnanam. That's what we should understand. And avritam is the same as the previous shloka. Avritam means covered. So, kama rupena in the meaning of tena of the previous shloka, that's what we have to substitute. Tena means kama rupena. So, idam jnanam, kama rupena, avritam asti. This jnanam, this discriminative power is covered by desire. And Krishna further gives the nature of this desire. What is this nature of this kama? What is the nature of the desire? He says, nitya vairina. It's a very, very strong statement. This kama is an eternal enemy. This desire is an eternal enemy for whom? Jnaninaha, for a jnani. Not for ajnanis, not for people like us. For us, we don't even recognize that kama is a problem. We don't recognize desire. We always, desire is a motivator, we think, oh, if I have desire only, I can move forward. I can progress only when I have desire. That fuels me up. That's what we think. For a jnani, the desire is the first enemy. It is an eternal enemy. He says, nitya vairina, eternal enemy. So, here jnani means jnana yogi. We have to think jnani as a jnana yogi who is pursuing knowledge. It is not a jnani who is an evolved, who is a self-realized person. It's only a jnana yogi yet. He has not become a jnani yet. He is still in the path of jnana marga. So, for a jnani, there is no such problem. This is jnani here means a jnana yogi only, not a jnani yet. He is on the way to become a jnani. So, jnaninaha here refers to not jnanis, to jignyasus, the people who are pursuing jnana marga. So, person who is seeking atma jnanam, this kama for him is a nitya vairi. It's a permanent enemy. It's an eternal enemy. Actually, here Shankaracharya, he asks the question, why do we say that it is a permanent enemy for a jnani? For a person who is in the pursuit of jnanam, why it should be a permanent enemy for him? And he gives a very interesting reason. In the case of worldly people like common people, they do not feel kama is bad at all. They are happy that they have desires, right? Common people. And they don't have any such value that kama is bad. They don't consider it as a bad value at all. So, what they do? They right away, they enter into the worldly pleasures. They go into them and they do not have any feeling of guilt that they are doing anything wrong about it at all. They are just pursuing whatever their desires are. And when they suffer, not at the time when they have desire, or not at the time when they go in pursuit of desire, but only at the time when the palam comes. When the palam comes, when the fruit of that action comes, when the result of that action comes, they say, this is dukkha. Till that time, they do not recognize that desire is bad for all the ajnanis, all the ignorant people. So an ajnani suffers for kama only when the palam comes, only when the result of the action comes, only later, not at the time of doing or at the time of desiring. But the one who is a spiritual student, who is a jnana yogi, he had already been informed that kama is not good because he is not an ordinary man. He is a person who is in pursuit of knowledge. So he is a jnana yogi. So he already has studied Gita. He already knows kama is bad. Okay. So in his mind, the knowledge is already put that he should not go after that. He already has it in the mind. And so what happens in his case? When he goes after kama, the worldly pleasures, one part of his mind tells him, you should not do that. Don't go after that. One part of the mind tells him, don't go after that. Because you are a Gita student. Don't go in pursuit of that, it says. And as even he enters into that, he feels even more bad. Because there is no complete taste of satisfaction at all for him. He has already gone into that. He is a diabetic. And already it has been told to him, you should not go after sugar. And he has now gone in. And so he already enters with the guilt. I am not supposed to take it, I am entering. So already guilt is there. And once he goes and has the sugar, he also takes it with guilt only. He thinks, oh, I should not have taken it, I have taken. Now what will happen again? Maybe I have to go to the doctor. Goes through the same thing again. So while in pursuit, he feels guilty. When he is enjoying it also, he feels guilty. He never enjoys it thoroughly at all. He feels guilty. And later at the time when the phalam comes, we know how he is. So that also is guilt and also suffering. So for a jnani, a person who is already informed about the badness of kama, this person will never enjoy it at any time. For an ajnani, at least at the time of desiring knowledge and during the pursuit of knowledge, he thinks he is fine. Only when the phalam comes, he suffers. Whereas this person suffers either desiring, during desire, or during the pursuit, and finally when the phalam comes. So that is the case of jnana yogi. So here jnaninaha refers to not a full jnani, but a person who is a jnana yogi, who is in pursuit of knowledge. So then people will conclude one thing. That is the disadvantage of learning Gita. Let us not know this at all, right? At least when I go after the desires, I will enjoy it completely. And when I'm enjoying that, let me tell, when the palam comes, when it comes, who worries? It will come later, right? Dead yesterday and born tomorrow. Why worry about it, right? So that is the take most people will take, right? But for people who have to be in the pursuit of knowledge, because they also, it's only temporary phenomenon. Once they come to the palam side, then they will blame themselves so much. Why I had gone through this route at all? So they will do that. But in the case of Ajnani, so Sankaracharya says, for an Ajnani, kama gives problem only later. Whereas for a Jnani, for a Jnana Yogi who is in the pursuit of Jnanam, kama gives the problem all through. So it is Nitya. We are trying to explain this, why it is called a Nitya Vaidhi. Right? It's a permanent end. So it may appear that the Jnani's condition is better, perhaps. We may think, right? Unfortunately, we cannot come to that condition also, because why? He is already in the Jnana Marga. That means he has advanced so much. He was a Karmi, he became a Karma Yogi, then he concentrated on Upasana, and after all that thing, he did Shravanam, he did Mananam, and now he is in the Jnana Marga path. Having come this far, he cannot revert back. Having come this far, he cannot become an Ajnani and say, oh, no, fine, let me go after all this karma. He cannot do that. Right? So it is, he cannot do that way. So the only way is what? To continue the journey. To continue the journey and conquer the karma business. Rather than trying to avoid the feeling of guilt and this and that at all. One should not do any of those. So Krishna says, jnaninaha nitya vairinaha. For them, this is a nitya vairi, permanent enemy. So kama, which is a permanent enemy for a jnana yogi, then the next adjective is what? Dushpurena. In that shloka, he says dushpurena. Dushpurena means dukkena puranam yasya. Dukkena. The one which can never be filled up, which can never be fulfilled, never be satisfied. Person can never be satisfied. Actually, it is not fulfilled. If krama is not fulfilled, what will come? Krodha will come, anger will come. If it is fulfilled, what will come? Greed, lobha will come, greed will come. Or fear will come if it is not fulfilled. So, if fulfilled, lobha will come. If unfulfilled, krodha will come. Actually, there is a shloka, a very interesting shloka. Nishvaha yeka shatam, shati dasha shatam, laksham sahasradipaha, lakshesaha shitipalatham, shitipatihi chakreshatham vanchati, chakreshaha punarindratham, Surapatihim Brahmaspatam Vanchatim Brahma Vishnupatam Harihi Harapatam Trishnavadim Kogataha. That's the question they are asking. Nishvaha means a person who has no money at all. A guy who is a beggar, he has nothing. Shatam, if he gets 100, he is very happy. If you give him 100 rupees, he is very happy. Nishvaha, Eka Shatam, 100 rupees, he is very happy. Shati, Dasha Shatam. A guy has 100 rupees, Dasha Shatam, 1000, he is very happy. You 100,000 rupees is good. Laksham sahasradipaha. If a guy has got, one becomes a sahasradipaha, then he will be, if he has 1,000, he wants to become a lakshadipaha. He wants to have 1 lakh. Lakshesham kshitipalatam. The guy who has already 1 lakh, what he wants? He wants to become a king or a minister. One of those things. And Kshitipati, Chakre Shatamam Vanchati. The one who is a Kshitipati, who is already a king, he wants to become king of kings, emperor. Chakre Shaham Punar Indratam. The emperor wants to become Indra. And Surapati is Indra. Surapati, Brahmaspadam Vanchati. So he is already Surapati, king of kings, Indra. He wants to become Brahma, the creator. And Brahma, Vishnupatam. Brahma wants to become Vishnu. And Vishnu, Harihi, Harapatam. And Vishnu wants to become Shiva. You can put the other way, whichever you want. So whether Vishnu is, we are not worried about Vishnu, is superior. Put whatever you want. Trishna Vadim Kogataha. Who has put a full stop to Trishna? Nobody has found Trishna Avadim. Avadim means boundary. Avadi is boundary, limit. That is the limit for this desire. Notice it. Kogataha. Nobody has gone through that at all. So that is the shloka. So, Tushpurena. And Analena cha. This Analena cha is the explanation for Dushpura. Analena means ever dissatisfied, unquenchable. The fire is like that. You give more, it wants more. You consume more, it is going to now expand all the seven tongues all around. It wants even more, it can never be satiated at all. That is fire. So this desire is like that. So here there is another significance also. Dushpurena means which can be fulfilled with difficulty, lot of difficulty, you can put. Not only it cannot be satisfied, even to fulfill that, how much of work you have to do? You have to go here, you have to go there, you have to bribe this man, you have to bribe. All these things has to be done to fulfill that one desire. So it is not an easy thing that could be fulfilled at all. And not only after getting that, it is not going to satisfy me. Because one, I went through so much of struggle to get this. I got it. Am I happy now? No. I think, I should have got something better than this. Always, mind can never be fulfilled at all. So Dushpurena also indicates the struggle, the suffering, the anxiety, the worry, the involvement, all those things in fulfilling that desire. So difficult to fulfill. Analena cha means it will never get fulfilled at all. You can never make alam. Alam means enough. Analam. Apni means he never says enough at all. Alam means enough. Analam means that which will never give the buddhi that it is enough. You will never be satisfied. That will never satisfy. So this is the condition, because when you have to fulfill a kama, a desire, it is an object which is not yet attained. Kama is what? Towards an object which is not attained yet. Right? That is an object, I want to get it. That is the desire. It is not attained yet. So kama is necessary to attain that object. But karma is very difficult. You have to do karma to get the kama fulfilled. I have to do a lot of work. I have to engage myself in lack of actions to get that thing. That involves energy. So karma is not difficult. But the karma, to achieve that karma, is most difficult. It is going to be very tough. I need time, I need money, I need effort, I need peace of mind. All those things I need. So whereas in the case of moksha, karma is not at all involved. No problem at all. If it is kevala jnana, only knowledge alone is for moksha. There is nothing else, no work needed. That's knowledge. Here, in case of karma and the kama, it involves a lot of difficulty. In terms of moksha, no difficulty at all. It's just only jnana. No work has to be done. And with such a kama which is very, very difficult to fulfill, which is an eternal enemy, nitya vairi for a jnani, by this kama, what happens? This discriminative ability is blunted. It is gone. So it is veiled. It is covered. And that is why it is called an enemy, a nitya vaidhi, an eternal enemy. And then we may ask, if you cover discrimination, why should you call it an enemy? Okay, it is covering discrimination, that is true. You don't have to call it an enemy. Sometimes covering may be good. You don't have to, because Krishna calls it as an enemy. Right? Initially, what it is, this vairagya, this vivekam, is in the process of what? Dharma, adharma vivekam, he is not having. What is the right, what is not wrong, what is not right, he doesn't know. That is blunted initially. But later what happens? It is also blunting the Atma Anatma Viveka also. That is where it is an enemy. When you don't know the discrimination between what is Atma and what is Anatma, you can never gain moksha. So it is enemy towards getting moksha. First he doesn't know dharma adharma. That is true. He doesn't know what is dharma, what is adharma, he doesn't know. But later, he will not know what is Atma and Anatma, that Viveka Shakti, which is fundamental. to gain moksha, he will not have. So throughout, viveka is the wealth of the seeker. For any seeker, what is the important wealth? Is viveka. The viveka shakti should be there. The ability to discriminate what is eternal, what is ephemeral. What is good for you, what is not good for you. That shakti should be there. So when viveka is snatched away, when it is taken away, it is like losing petrol. There is no gas in the car. You can go nowhere. So that's what happens. Our further spiritual journey is going to be impossible. So viveka shakti is so important. Therefore, kama is called an enemy. Because of kama, this person loses the viveka shakti to understand the difference between atma and anatma, which will give him moksha. So it is called an eternal enemy. So it removes, it dries up the fuel for spiritual journey. So purushartham apakari shatruhu. So it is a shatru. It is a definition of shatru. What is the definition of shatru? Enemy. We have so many enemies. The real enemy is what? Whatever takes away the purushartha. That is shatru. That is the purushartha is moksha. The viveka. Viveka shakti. That is shatru. And who is a friend? Purushartha upakari mitra. The one who enables you to gain this knowledge, that only is your friend. Otherwise, this is an enemy. So in these two shlokas, Krishna, he explains how kama is an enemy. Okay? And in the previous shloka, 37th shloka, we know first that kama is an enemy. And in the 38, 39 shlokas, he says why kama is an enemy. First he declared it is an enemy. Recognize kama is an enemy. Now he says why it is an enemy. So Krishna is really going through a very, very systematic analysis. That's what he is doing. And after that, we finished the other two shlokas in the last class, the 40, 41. So 40, now we will continue with the next shloka. Actually, the last shloka, tasmatvam indriyanyadav niyamya varadarshava papmanam prajakikhenam jnana vijnana nashanam. That is the shloka we concluded in the last class. Tasmat means therefore, since indriya means the manas and buddhi. You know, he said these are the three centers of kama. What are three centers of kama? Indriyas, the sense organs, manas, the mind, and buddhi. So you have to identify these are the responsible, these are the culprits. Blast them. That's what he told earlier. So he says indriyas, the sense organs, manas, and buddhi are the basis of karma. They are the strong centers where the kama lies hidden. So how Krishna develops? First he said, you recognize kama is enemy. That's number one. Then you recognize, you understand why kama is an enemy. First recognize kama is an enemy. Second, why kama is an enemy. And third, find out the centers of kama, the basis of kama, where kama lies. And fourth, you blow it up completely. So this is how you can get rid of kama, you can uproot that. That's what Krishna gives the analysis. So he first says, attack indriyas. Attack indriyani. He says, adav indriyani niyamya. Niyamana means control. Controlling, conquering, keeping it under, mastering, winning over. That's all niyamana. So first win over or conquer, adav. Adav means in the beginning. Adav in the beginning. Indriyani, the sense organs. Yena. By this sense, mind and buddhi control, enam, prajahi. Prajahi means destroy papmana. Papmana is the sinful kama. The kama that will lead to all you know, papa punyas. You get rid of that papmana. Here refers to all desires, kama. So the sinful kama, you destroy by practicing this discipline. Here jnana means, we already told in the last class, jnana refers to both types of jnana. Paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. I defined what they are. When we first listen, when you go to a Vedanta class, what they say first? Satyam jnanam anantam brahma. So brahma is what the characteristics of brahman. Satyam jnanam anantam. That's what they normally tell. So when you listen to that knowledge, that is called paroksha jnanam. So when people tell you what is satyam jnanam anantam, that is brahman, that knowledge is paroksha jnanam. Then on scriptures what it says, it doesn't stop with that. Now you know what is Brahman. But scriptures go on to say, that Brahman don't require anywhere else. That is you yourself. So you yourself is that Chaitanyam, that Parabrahman. So when you understand that is called Aparoksha Jnanam. So Paroksha Jnanam and Aparoksha Jnanam, these are the two types of Jnanam. So a person will not have either of them if he has. So when one knows that Brahman is the very subject, me, when the very subject, that knowledge is aparoksha jnana. And both these jnanams are possible. Now here it was told us jnanam and vijnanam are paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. They are all, that will be possible only when kama is not there. As long as kama is here, these two jnanam is never possible. Therefore, kama is called the destroyer of paroksha and aparoksha jnanam, jnanam and vijnanam. Okay? So, if you want these two jnanams, you should not allow kama to remain in the heart. It should not be there at all. That's what was told in the 41st sloka. Then we will continue. Indriyani paranyahuhu.
Indriyani paranyahuhu. Indriyani paranyahuhu.
Indriyebhya param manaha.
Indriyebhya param manaha. Indriyebhya param manaha.
Indriyani paranyahuhu. Indriyebhya param manaha.
Indriyani paranyahuhu. Indriyebhya param manaha. Indriyani paranyahuhu. Indriyebhya param manaha.
Manasastu para buddhihi.
Manasastu para buddhihi. Manasastu para buddhihi.
Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
Yo buddhe paratastu saha. Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
Manasastu para buddhihi. Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
Manasastu para buddhihi. Yo buddhe paratastu saha. Manasastu para buddhihi. Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
So in the shloka 41, up to that shloka, Krishna talked elaborately about kama, the topic of kama, and concluded. And he also said how it can be destroyed. And that is achieved by what? Shama, Dama and Viveka. Shama is mind control, Dama is sense control, and Viveka, Viveka Shakti, discriminative ability. But we should now understand, by mind control and sense control, Kama is only relatively destroyed. We have to understand, it's not complete destruction of Kama. By mind control and sense control, you can only relatively destroy Kama. It is not totally destroyed. Total destruction of kama does not take place by any of these practices. By sense control or mind control or all the viveka, none of them can completely destroy kama. It is only like a first aid. Why? Why it is only a first aid? Because we should remember that the root of kama is what? Is ignorance. Is avidya. Is ignorance of the self. Ignorance of my nature. That is the root of kama, right? It can, so unless that ignorance is removed, you cannot uproot it completely at all. So ajnanam or avidya or ignorance, self-ignorance, that is the fundamental root of all kama. Okay. So this we have seen earlier also. Because of self-ignorance, what do I do? I associate myself with my body. Because of my self-ignorance, I associate myself with my body. Then I develop ego. I develop ahankara. That's what I tell you. So, ahankara. So, the moment I identify myself with the body, then what do? I develop a sense of limitation. I am 5 feet so many inches tall. I am so many pounds. I am alpa shaktiman, alpa gyaha. I have all those attributes about myself because I think I am limited, which arises out of my own ego, my own ahankara. Because body, mind, buddhi are all limited. The moment I identify with them, I also become limited. So, deha abhimanat parichinnatvam. Deha abhimanat. Means by association with your body, parichinnatvam, you feel limited. Ajnanena deha abhimanaha. Because of self-ignorance, you have got the association with the body. We think we are the body. Because of ignorance, I have the body identification. And because of body identification, I have sense of limitation. And because of this parichinnatvam, this sense of limitation, what do I do? I begin to desire to complete myself. I think I am lacking something. I have not gained Purnatvam yet. And because of that, for me to gain Purnatvam, I have to fill it with something. It is empty or it is not full completely. So I always go after things I have desired. So if I can say, Aham Triptosmi, I am contented, Aham Purnosmi, I have everything to me, I have nothing else I lack, then I will not go after anything to fulfill whatever is remaining. Nothing is remaining. I am only infinite. So because of that, because of this parichinnatva, because of this limitation, I now try to gain things, so I have karma. So the root of karma is because of ajnanam or self-ignorance. Therefore, if karma has to completely go, what should we do? One has to destroy completely ignorance. Self-ignorance has to completely go away. And that is why Krishna said in the second chapter, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. However much you want to control, you might conquer kama, krodha and all those things, no problem. But they all will be still there inside in subtle form. In the seed form, they are still there in the mind. As rajam, rasam, as bija rupena, like a seed, they are all there. All these vasanas are there inside the mind as seeds. And if that subtlest kama krodha, if that also has to go, then what you should do? Param drishtva nivartate, only by self-knowledge. Param means self-knowledge. Param drishtva, only then it will go away. Till that time, even if you think you have conquered kama, it is there still in the body, in the mind, as in the subtle form. Therefore, all the shama, mind control, dhamma, sense control, viveka, they are all only relative cures. None of them are permanent cures. And after relatively curing, then what we should do? We should go to Vedanta Vichara. Up to that, one can do all these things, karma yoga, all those things can enable you to get all that. But then you go to Vedanta Vichara, and there only one has to gain Atma Jnanam through Vedanta Vichara. One has to go to Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. It has to become part of you. Then only it can be completely removed. And what is that Atma Jnanam that we talked about again in the second chapter? In the second Sankhya Yoga chapter, we already, in that section, we spoke about so many things. Dehi Nityam Avadyoyam, Sloka 30, Nitya Sarvagataha Sthanuhum, Achedyoyam Adakyoyam, Sloka 24. All those things we talked about there, about the nature of this Atma. Therefore, in this Sloka, Krishna gives a nutshell of Atma Swarupam, the nature of Atma, which is the ultimate solution to Kama. So, for Kama, the only solution is Atma Jnana. Without that, you can have only relative cures, you cannot have absolute cure. So the previous ones are only temporary cures. They are relative solutions, which are shamadama, etc. So permanent solution is self-knowledge. And here, Krishna is talking about Atma by a particular technical discussion called Pancha Kosha Vivekaha. In Tattva Bodha, when we started at the beginning, I made a mention that you can look at the body from two angles. One is called Sharira Trayam, the body consisting of three bodies. One is called the gross body, Sthula Shariram, then the subtle body, Sukshma Shariram, and the causal body, Karna Shariram. So this can be looked at either as a Sharira Trayam, composing of these three. And I already told what those three things are. The Sthula Shariram is the gross body, what you see. And Sukshma Shariram is a subtle body, like all these sense organs. They are the power. For example, eye is a gross body, the eye which you see. But the power of seeing, the sight, that is subtle body. That is Indriyam. That is called Indriyam. This is called Godaka. So there are 17 subtle bodies. That is, what are the 17 subtle bodies? We already told you earlier, just only refreshing. The five sense organs, Pancha Pranas. Prana, Apana, Vyana, Udana, Samana. Five different physiological functions. They control the different physiological functions in the body. So Pancha Pranas, five Karmendriyas, organs of action, my hand, leg and all those things. Manas and Buddhi, all these 17, they are called subtle bodies. So gross body, then subtle body, then Karna Shariram is the causal body, which is subtler than the subtle body. Also, that is supposed to be responsible for these two bodies, Sharira Dvayasya Karana Matram, because that is the fundamental basis based on which these two bodies evolved, that is called the Karna Shariram. So this is called the Sharira Traya discussion, Sharira Traya. And now Krishna is not doing Shariratrayam here. He is doing Pancha Kosha Viveka, that this body consists of five sheets, five layers. Pancha Koshas means five sheets. And what are that? Annamaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, Vijnanamaya Kosha, Anandamaya Kosha. So this body and then Atma. So this body consists of five layers. And Annamaya Kosha is the external most, the grossest of all the things, is called Annamaya Kosha. That's what you see, the Sura Shariram, what you see is Annamaya Kosha. And interior to the Annamaya Kosha is called Pranamaya Kosha. Pranamaya Kosha, interior to that is Manomaya Kosha, interior to that is Vijnanamaya Kosha, and interior to that is Anandamaya Kosha. So these are all the five sheets, and Atma is understood as myself. And all these are understood as external coverings. All these five sheets, they are layer after layer after layer of coverage of that Atma. So it's like a dress, like a sheet, covering, which has to be given up sometime. You have to remove your association with any of these sheets if you have to understand your own true nature. That is what is pointed out here. Indriyani paran yahuhu. These sense organs, indriyani, are supposed to be superior, are more and more interior to that, to the physical body. Sense organs are supposed to be superior to the gross body. So it is interior, it is subtler, so it is interior. Gross body is exterior, this is interior. And indriyebhyaha manaha param. What is superior to the indriyas, to the sense organs, is my mind. So superior to the sense organs and interior to the sense organs is the manaha, is the mind. Then manasastu para buddhihi, the intellect, that is vijnanamaya kosha, that is interior to manomaya kosha, into the mind, and it is superior to the manomaya kosha, that is vijnanamaya kosha, and yo buddhehe paraha, and that which is superior and interior to the vijnanamaya kosha, saha atma, that is considered to be the atma. So that is the definition he gives using the pancha kosha viveka. Actually, in Tattva Bodha, Acharya discusses all these things in great detail. We only looked at it in a nutshell, that the two ways of looking at the Shariram, one is Sharira Trayam, another is Pancha Koshas. So I, the self, or the Atma, am beyond all these five sheets. That is what my knowledge should be. I am beyond all these five sheets. And here does not give the logic or the reason why you should think beyond that, because that is not the topic here. That is, we have to understand that. That is a separate topic in Tattva Bodha. But we should remember that the reason is very, very simple. How do we understand that? Generally, what I know is always different from the knower. I know something. I know this cup. This cup is different from me. I know the cup. It is different from me. I know this table. It is different from me. I know the book, different from me. I know the body, different from me. But I should never say I know the, when I say I know the body, it is an object to be known. It is not the subject itself. I, the subject, am different from the object that I know. So the body is different from me. That knowledge has to come. We can all know that your body is different from my body. That's not a big deal. Everybody knows that. But to know one's own body is different from one's own self, that requires viveka. That requires the understanding. The atma, anatma, viveka one should have for them to conclude that I am different from my own body. So body is also known as different from me. So also pranamaya kosha is different from me. Manomaya kosha is different from me. Vijnanamaya kosha is different from me. All these koshas are also different from me. I am not any one of them. They are all inert anatmas, whereas I am the Atma, Suddha Chaitanya Swarupaha. So therefore, I am the knower of the Panchakoshas, so I should be different from the Panchakoshas, and therefore different. So this is the logic which we are giving here. So which we had seen actually in Tattva Bodha, but we didn't go through the full class here. And this Atma, one has to know, one has to understand, if one has to destroy Kama completely. So this knowledge one should have, because if you still associate with any of these bodies, to fulfill the needs of the body, you will always be desiring this and that. Always will be there. And this is going to be said actually in the last shloka, by this Atma Jnana, Kama will be totally destroyed. That's what Krishna is going to say. Evam buddhe param buddhva.
Evam buddhe param buddhva. Evam buddhe param buddhva.
Samstavyatmanam atmana.
Samstavyatmanam atmana. Samstavyatmanam atmana.
Evam buddhe param buddhva. Samstavyatmanam atmana.
Evam buddhe param buddhva. Samstavyatmanam atmana. Evam buddhe param buddhva.
జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో
జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో
కామరూపం దురాసతం
కామరూపం దురాసతం కామరూపం దురాసతం
జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో కామరూపం దురాసతం
జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో కామరూపం దురాసతం జహి శత్రు మహాబాహో కామరూపం దురాసతం
సో ది ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ది శ్లోక ఇస్ వాట్ by knowing this atma the atma mentioned in the previous shloka we just saw namely panchakosha atitatvena uktam atmanam yatva knowing that atma which is beyond the five sheets panchakosha may you destroy kama kama for good, totally uprooted so we have to now distinguish the previous sadhanas like shama like dama all those things they are also for destroying kama but they are only relative destruction like cutting the branches and the trunk of the tree you have not removed the root you can cut the branches you can cut the trunk all that you can do but the root has to be removed and after doing that atmajnanam will completely uproot and that is for total destruction and how does Krishna says here evam buddhehe param buddhva so param buddhva thus knowing that param buddhehe param atmanam buddhva knowing the atma which is beyond the buddhi which is beyond the buddhi and all the five koshas we already told all the five koshas and that is not enough knowing that it is beyond all this is not enough I have known fine because even after knowing the self then what happens the habitual kama that habitual kama krodha they still are there that is habitual he is like that only initially out of ignorance I make mistake Earlier, I didn't know anything, so I started making mistakes by ignorance. Now, because of habit, I make mistakes. I didn't mean it. A lot of times, I don't mean it, but it's my habit. There are some people who will be angry all the time. My habit. You can never see that guy smiling at all. Face is always frowning. His nature is like that. He's habituated to anger. So, that's the people. So, either way, a mistake is a mistake. So, first I do mistake out of ignorance. Later, I do mistake out of habit. So, both are mistakes. Therefore, it is not enough if we know that. We should completely uproot the viparita bhavana. That is, this ignorance has to completely go away. Only then, prajna will become sthita prajna. We already saw in the second chapter, prajna is this knowledge. If that knowledge has to become a firm knowledge in me, sthita prajna, this is what I should do. Okay? So, prajna, the wisdom, has to be converted to sthita prajna, a firm wisdom. It should be done. Then that is done by actually getting rid of all the habitual vasanas. I should get rid of all of them. All these habituated things, kama, krodhas, all this have to go. So for many people, for these things may become very, very natural. All these kama, krodhas are very natural for, because even his ordinary talk will be like that for some people. So it is not for, it is part of his personality. The person is like that. So samstabhyam atmana. Samstabhya means fixing the mind firmly in that knowledge. Fixing the mind firmly in that knowledge. Atmana, with the help of the mind. Here it means mind or intellect. Antakarna, the inner equipment. So you have to use the mind or something to keep that knowledge firm. So having known the Atma and fixing the mind firmly in that knowledge means what? Not forgetting that knowledge. When I say fixing the mind firmly in that knowledge means you should never forget that knowledge any time. It should be there all the time. Even if you are middle of the sleep, even at that time you should be conscious that I am beyond all these koshas. I am beyond all these vasanas. That knowledge should be there. So, which is nothing but nididhyasana. This is nothing but nididhyasana, right? We know shravanam, mananam. Nididhyasana is what? Trying to assimilate that knowledge. It should be part of every blood cells. That is that knowledge. So, atmajnane manasaha stambanam. Keeping the mind ever in that knowledge. Never allowing that knowledge to be forgotten at all, which is nothing but nididhyasanam. So, nididhyasanena sthiri krutva. You have to keep that knowledge firm. Jahi shatrum. By doing that, what do? Destroy, jahi, or kill the shatru, the atma shatru, the kama. You destroy that completely. And what form of enemy it is? Kama rupam shatru, which is in the form of kama, which is the form of desire. Here also we should remember that kama is only a representative.
Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, all these Atma Shatrus, they all will get destroyed. Once you destroy, this means everything gets destroyed. So may you destroy the enemy in the form of Kama, 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 Krodha. And what type of enemy it is? Durasadam, which is very, very difficult to conquer. Kama is a Shatru, which is very, very difficult to conquer. Dukkhenam, Asadhanam, Yasya. Asadhanam means destruction. The one whose destruction is very difficult. So Krishna acknowledges that fact. It is very difficult. So one has to put enormous effort to destroy that. So it is very difficult. So even though I have given you various methods, Krishna says, I have given you so many methods, practice of Shama, practice of Dhamma, all Viveka, all those things I have given you actually three tablets now for temporary cure. And I am giving you now one permanent cure also. And that is the self-knowledge. So these four are different methods. All of them have to be utilized. To permanently destroy in the beginning is very difficult. So you take all these temporary cures. So once you take the temporary cures, you get habituated to the cure now. Try to uproot the entire karma by self-knowledge. So that's what Krishna says. So in spite of these methods, it is not going to be an easy task. Even though Krishna has given all these methods, they are all nicely said here. But when you go and really practice, everything is going to be a huge challenge. Very, very, very difficult to practice. So that is why one has to be alert, sattvic all the time. Because the rajasic and tamasic attitudes will try to overpower our sattvic nature. So we have to be alert 24 hours a day to remain in the sattvic plane so that we know these are all Atma Shatrus, I should get rid of them. So we normally want to get over anger once in a while. Always, you know, we remind ourselves, no, I should not be angry. So sometimes the wife will prepare the husband before the son enters. That guy might have done something and coming here. She will prepare him. Don't get angry with that guy. He has done this. So people might do all that thing. That's not enough. It should be an obsession to get rid of this problem of anger or suppression or any of those things. It becomes an obsession for you. Then only a person will make it the solution permanent. So by saying Durasadam, Krishna means never take it lightly. He cautions us. He never just says, oh, you do all these things and goes away. He recognizes the problem which people have. It is very, very difficult. Take it as a very, very difficult and a very serious problem and start earnestly and sincerely right from now. Don't wait for 10 days. A lot of people, what they do? All this Vedanta and all are after retirement. Right? As if after retirement, when we go to the Vedanta thing, it's going to come immediately. Because vasanas will never go away. You start earnestly. It is never late. Just start earnestly from that day onwards. Only when you recognize it. Because normally, the tendency will be to find fault with the other person. Because these are all tendencies of people. So, we have to correct ourselves every time. No, do not do that. So, every time you have to put a check, put a break. So, for karma yoga, you do practice. For that, you don't require permanent restriction. Karma yoga is a practice, sadhana. Karma yoga is only a sadhana. You are not doing any permanently destroying anything. That's only a sadhana. So, first we have to keep temporary destruction through all this karma yoga, shama, dhamma and all that thing and then come to atma jnanam which will lead to permanent cure of karma. So, temporary destruction, practice karma yoga, getting atma jnanam, permanent destruction, that is the sequence of sadhanas. So, Krishna now what he has done? He has answered Arjuna's question in which shloka? Shloka 36. What is the shloka he said? Anichyanapi varshneya. Baladiva niyojitaha, atakena prayuktoyam, papam charati purushaha. That was the query that was discussed at that time. Why people still do that, even though they know it is evil to them, even though they know it is not good to them? Why people, by what force they are fueled up to commit all these sins, commit all these things? Why still people are doing that? It is because of the karma problem. And now how to conquer karma? Both the temporary and the permanent solutions, both Krishna has given. With this, Krishna concludes the third chapter. Om Tat Sat Iti.
Om Tat Sat Iti. Om Tat Sat Iti.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su.
Upanishad Su.
Upanishad Su. Upanishad Su.
Brahma Vidyayam.
Brahma Vidyayam. Brahma Vidyayam.
Yoga Shastre,
Yoga Shastre, Yoga Shastre,
Sri Krishna. संवादे
श्री कृष्णार्जुन संवादे श्री कृष्णार्जुन संवादे
कर्मयोगो नाम
कर्मयोगो नाम
तृतीयोऽध्यायः
तृतीयोऽध्यायः तृतीयोऽध्यायः
दिस चैप्टर इज टाइटल्ड कर्मयोग because karma yoga alone is very elaborately discussed in this chapter, so it is called karma yoga.
So I have a question.
Yes.
For karma yogi, right, how does kama play a role in this thing? Well, basically because he will be only involved in the action thing, right? He will not be after phalam. So does desire play a role still in this?
He is in action because of phalam. He is expecting something, and this person is now is a karmi, is doing that thing, action for expecting some phalam. When he is a karma yogi, he also has a palam. And that palam is his ability to offer anything to the Lord. So he is doing it with a motive that I am doing this action to offer to the Lord. I am doing this action as a duty. I am doing this action as a sacrifice. He is doing all that. He is still an ajnani. Karma yogi is still not a jnani. So for him, he still has desires. But those desires are not desires which are self-centered desires. He is doing those things, fulfilling those desires for the common good. So it's still the desire of it. So he also has those desires. But purpose is different. So it fuels him up. So I can do more service to people. Works even more. So his attitude has changed. So he is a good attitude. But still he is fueled up by his desires. So once in a way it may come up. So you know, a lot of people who are doing a lot of social work, once in a way, they will also feel depressed. Oh, look at this, how I do so much. Look at all these people who have no gratitude at all. I do all these people, they don't even recognize at all. So they acknowledge everybody on that day. One person they left, that is me. People say all these things. Even though he is doing good service. But still, that feeling of, that is because of what? It is still there. He has not conquered that. It is still there in the mind. He has suppressed it by his various services and all that. But that will erupt. Sometime it will come. Many times it comes. Even for a true karma yogi. So now let us summarize this chapter. So in the third chapter, Krishna talked elaborately about various aspects of karma yoga, which he has given in a nutshell in the second chapter. So in the second chapter, Krishna just, you know, he made a mention of karma yoga, but he took it up in the third chapter and discussed it elaborately. Actually, in the second chapter, he gave it in two shlokas. What are the two shlokas? Karmani eva adhikarahate ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palahetubhu ma te sangostra karmani. That is one. And the next shloka is yogastha guru karmani sangantekva. So he told these two shlokas, and this was elaborately discussed in the third chapter. So in the beginning of the third chapter, Krishna talked about two types of lifestyles. Which a person can choose. This choice is available to everyone. You can choose either this lifestyle or that lifestyle. So it can be either a secluded lifestyle, like a sannyasi, seclude yourself from society, or an active lifestyle. You can be in action. You don't have to be in seclusion. You can be in society in the middle of all actions. These are the two lifestyles he prescribed. And whatever may be the lifestyle, the first sadhana everyone has to go through is karma yoga. Whether you want to become a sannyasi and lead a secluded life, or whether you want to be in the plane of action, be a grahastha and be part of society, in either case, both have to follow this path of this sadhana, namely karma yoga, which gives purification. Karma yogena chitta shuddhihi. You get internally pure. You get pure, purified by following karma yoga. And then on, Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga from four different angles. What are the four angles? He took karma yoga from the angle as the commandment of the Lord. This is what you are supposed to do. This is the duty. This is ordained by the Lord. This is given in the scriptures. I follow what the scriptures have told. The entire Veda Purva Bhaga is full of karma kanda. So the Vedas say this. So I follow this. Vedas are God's words. So I am just following. So niyatam karma is ordained. So follow that. So that is one angle. And the second angle is as a worship of the Lord. So when I do this, I offer my worship, my bhakti, my devotion to the Lord. This is pleasing to the Lord. So I'm doing this to please the Lord, expressing my gratitude to the Lord for whatever He has given me in this world. So this is an expression of gratitude and worship to the Lord. Or you can do karma yoga from a purificatory exercise. By doing rituals, by following all these actions, noble actions, it purifies my mind and makes me eligible to follow Jnana Marga. So as a purificatory thing, I can do that. I am not doing it to please any Lord, but this purifies me, it gives me peace of mind. So people can pursue that way. Or people can also do it in fourth angle as dharma or duty for the maintenance of harmony in society. I do all these actions because I have to do my part in the system, in the nature. Everything does that. The plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the ecological system, they are all doing their jobs right. I should not be the only person to break that link. So to maintain harmony, I should do my part correctly. So to maintain the universal harmony, I do karma. So these are all the various angles by which karma yoga was approached by Krishna in the beginning. And having given all the four angles, then Krishna finally said, even if a person is a siddha purushaha, an evolved person, an accomplished person, a jnani, he may not require karma yoga anymore because he is already a jnani. He has already purified himself, pursued the jnana marga. Even then he has to follow karma yoga. And Krishna said, why? The reason is, the jnani remaining in the field of activity, that is called loka sangraha. He is not karma yogi anymore, but he is a jnani in the field of loka sangraha. So a jnani is not a karma yogi. You cannot call a jnani a karma yogi. He is not a karma yogi, he is a jnani. Because karma yogi is still an ajnani. So this loka sangraha was elaborately discussed by Krishna. So even though all these jnani, for example, acharyas and all, you know, they are still doing all the pujas, worship, everything they do. For what? Loka sangraha. You cannot say they are doing out of bhakti. You cannot say out of karma yoga. No. They are loka sangraha, pointing out why loka sangraha is necessary. Krishna made elaborate discussion on that. Because jnani alone, they are responsible for maintenance of the proper way of life. We look at them for conducting our life. So if they commit a mistake, what will happen? It will confuse the whole world. They will think, oh, that is how it should be done. Because he has done it. Normally we say, you know, oh, so-and-so has said it. That means it is gospel now. So they cannot afford to make any mistake. They are responsible citizens of the world. Because they are the ones who really hold the conduct of dharma. Okay. So karma yogi, from ajnani, karma yoga from the ajnani's angle and karma yoga from a jnani's angle, both were discussed by Krishna. So from a jnani, you cannot call it karma yoga, call it loka sangraha. He is not a karma yogi. Then Krishna concluded the topic by pointing out the glory of karma yoga also. He went through a lot of discussion on the glory of karma yoga. And then he entered to another important topic, why people do not follow karma yoga. Because it looks so nice and so beautiful. But still people are not following karma yoga. They are still karmis. They are not still karma yogis. Why? So Krishna went through an elaborate discussion. So in spite of knowing karma yoga will be a means to liberation, to get moksha, people are still not following. Why? So he says, everybody is interested in moksha ananda. Everybody wants moksha. You ask anybody, you don't want moksha. Everybody wants moksha. Everybody wants peace of mind. Everybody wants shanti, ananda. And the scripture promises absolute ananda through karma yoga. You can get ananda, no, because karma yoga is chitta shuddhi. Then from chitta shuddhi you can go through the entire process. Then aham brahmasmi will make sense to you, sravana manana, all that you can do, because this is the first step. In spite of it, people do not prefer karma yoga. They do not follow karma yoga. Why? And Krishna said, it is all prakriti. He used the discussion. It is prakriti. A person comes under the control of his own prakriti, of his own vasanas. Of his own vasanas, his own individuality, his own selfishness. So he comes under control of that. He called it prakriti there, and his own vasanas. So he does not use his free will to understand what the Shastra says. He has read the Shastra, but he is not using his free will to understand the significance of what he has read. So he doesn't lead a life as given in the Shastras because of his own prakriti, because of his own vasanas. And having indicated this, what he says, this very topic, he further discusses that after Arjuna's question. Arjuna wants to know more about it. So he is discussing it further. So as an answer to that question, why do people commit mistakes in spite of their knowledge. So it is not the question of they don't know. They know what is wrong. They know what is good. Many people, there are people who know what is, but in spite of it, they make these mistakes. Why are they making these mistakes? So Krishna is trying to answer them. Why are people evil in spite of their goodness? I told, gave the example of even Duryodhana. Duryodhana says, I know what is dharmam and adharmam, but still I want to commit adharma. Ravana is the greatest scholar. He knows everything. Still he committed that great mistake. Kama. So all these things, why these people do that? So Krishna, previously Krishna said that it is because they are under the control of Prakriti. That's what he said first. And later he says the very same thing he puts in another language. They are under the control of Kama, Krodha, or Raga, Dvesha, Prakriti. It is only Prakriti, but he calls it by a different name. Raga, Dvesha, or Kama, Krodha. Okay. Then on, he elaborately discussed about the nature of Kama. How the desire is. The nature of Kama. And there we saw three or four points he emphasized. What are those? First thing is, Kama is an enemy. You have to recognize that Kama is an enemy. It is like a disease. It can kill me or it can destroy me completely spiritually. So I have to recognize that first. Kama can kill me, destroy me spiritually completely. And second, Kama is an enemy by way of covering my intelligence. My viveka shakti, my discriminative ability to understand what is good and what is not good. What is dharma, what is adharma, and finally what is atma and what is anatma. And then he said, the strength of kama. To understand kama is an enemy, you should know the strength of the enemy. So he says the strength of the enemy, the power centers of kama, where power centers of kama, where kama resides. He says the indriyani, the sense organs, manas, the mind, and buddhi. These are the three power centers of kama. And later he says, never try to attack kama directly. You have recognized kama is an enemy. Do not go and attack kama directly. It is not available tangibly for attack. So Krishna says that kama has to be tackled only by tackling the indriyas, manas and buddhi. Don't try to attack kama directly. It has to be attacked only through these centers. Only when you blow these centers, you can destroy kama completely. So, the sense organs are tackled by what? Dhamma, sense control. The manas, is manonigraha is done by manas control, shama. Right. So, mind is tackled by shama, not allowing. When you say tackled by shama, what does it mean? We already went through this discussion earlier. The first thought comes to your mind without your asking. You cannot stop it. That is prarabdha. For you to get the first thought, that you have no control on it. It will come. But it is still a very feeble first thought. But what are we doing? We are fanning it. We are making that a second thought, third thought. We repeat it. When we repeat it, it becomes a desire later. So first thought, curb it. We should be alert enough to know, oh, this first thought, that is where free will enters. You cannot stop prarabdha. First thought will come. But we are humans. We have the ability to have the free will. So we should be able to, when we are alert and sattvic, we can understand whether this first thought is going to do good to me or not. When you think it is not going to be good, snip it off right away. That is where my effort comes. If I, my free will, if it's not working properly, I will fan it. And it will become, it will take Vishwarupam later. Okay? So mind is tackled by Shama, not allowing the very first bad thought to continue further. So That is the way it should be done. And that I don't allow the first thought to repeat itself. That is called mind control. First thought will come. I don't allow it to repeat myself. Okay. And if you can avoid a bad thought to come, that is fine. But when it is there, don't allow to repeat. So the control of intellect is done by what? Only by learning. See indriyani manobuddhihi. Indriyani by dhamma. Manas by shama. And buddhi, intellect, by what? By learning, understanding. That is the only way. Buddhi will respond to only knowledge. Buddhi will not respond to anything else. So only by learning, only by understanding, only by thinking, only by inquiring, one can satisfy the requirements of buddhi. So Buddhi can know only the language of knowledge and wisdom. Buddhi will not know any other language. It knows only the language of knowledge and wisdom. So it can never go by command or temptation. Buddhi will never go by that. It can be tackled only by giving the right knowledge. That is where we should always aspire to put the effort to gain the right knowledge. And therefore, Vivekaha, the method of tackling Buddhi. So that is, Vivekaha is the discriminative power, is the ability to discriminate through Buddhi. So Shama, Dhamma and Viveka, one has to practice to take care of these three centers of karma. And once, when we say karma is tackled, that means what? Kama, Krodha, Lobha, all those things are all tackled. That's what we mean, all are tackled. That means the sattvic ability, the sattva guna, the buddhi is bright, alert. When we say it is sattvic, means alert and bright. Spiritual growth is fast. When such a condition is there, when the sattvic attitude is there, buddhi is bright, then the ability to spiritually grow, that is very fast, he can come to self-knowledge. For that person, if you say, Aham Brahmasmi, it will make sense to him. Otherwise, for all others, it will be only mere words. For him, it will make sense to him. And Krishna, he concluded the chapter by clarifying that also, that karma yoga and control of the sense organs and are themselves not enough. So, when he concluded the chapter, he says, karma yoga and the control of the sense organs, mind and buddhi alone, they are not enough. Later, the controlled organs have to be applied in gaining self-knowledge. So you first control the organs, and using the controlled organs, you gain spiritual knowledge. So control alone is not enough. It will not give you moksha or liberation. You control first, and using that, try to gain self-knowledge. The knowledge of self is what? Indriyani paranyaguhum indriyepyaha paramanaha manasastu parabuddhihi yo buddhehe parasastu saha. So that's what he said. I have to clearly know that I am different from the panchakoshas, the makeup of the body by all these five sheets. I am different from that. Panchakosham atitam atma aham asmi. That knowledge I should do. I am beyond the five koshas, five sheets. That knowledge should come. So karma yoga must culminate in jnana yoga. And jnana yoga will culminate in moksha or atma jnana. So with this Krishna concludes the third chapter. So since the main chapter, main topic is karma yoga, this chapter is called karma yoga. The entire chapter is called karma yoga. For example, in the second chapter, Sankhya yoga was discussed only in a few slokas. But still that is the important topic. So the entire chapter is called Sankhya yoga. Here the entire chapter itself is only karma yoga. Okay. So what is the knowledge of the self? Achedyoyam, adakyoyam, najayate mriyate vagata achate. These are all shlokas we learned in the second chapter. Veda vinashinam nityam, dehe nityam vidyoyam, so natve vaham jadunasam, nasado vidyatena bhavaha. So all those shlokas we saw in the second chapter, they all talked about jnana yoga. So all these were talking about the same, the nature of the self. So the second chapter talked about jnana yoga. Third chapter talked about karma yoga. That is, karma yoga is for preparation and jnana yoga for realization. Now, there is a small point here. If karma yoga is preparation, Krishna should have talked about karma yoga first and then should have come to jnana yoga. But Krishna is doing the other way. He talks about jnana yoga first and then come to karma yoga. Why? Krishna wants to tell the student that is the goal. For everybody, you should know first what is in for me. This is what is in for you. Okay, how do you get there? Through karma yoga. So Krishna tells first the goal, namely liberation, namely jnanam, namely moksha, atma. He discusses that is your goal. You have so many goals in life, they are all fine. The ultimate goal is only that, strive for it. How to strive? He discusses later. So that's why he put in the very second chapter, jnana yoga. When he comes to karma yoga, because this question normally people ask. Well, you should have then told karma yoga first. Then how? See, this is why Krishna puts it that way. So this teaching, Krishna says, is not a new teaching by Krishna. This teaching is in the Vedas already. Krishna, this is no Krishnaism here. It's all already given in the scriptures. Krishna is only reiterating them so that we can understand clearly. Because there are always students who may not go to the scriptures and learn. They are already given there. So Vedas, in the Karma Kanda portion, it teaches karma yoga elaborately. All kinds of karmas. And the Jnana Kanda portion, it teaches Jnana Yoga completely. There are Upanishads. It tells about all Atman, everything it teaches. So what we saw in the second chapter and third chapter is nothing but Samasta Vedartha Saraha. Whatever is given in the Vedas are summarized in these two chapters. People can quit. They don't have to learn anymore in Bhagavad Gita if these two chapters are understood. Because this is the essence of the entire Vedic literature. So after this, all he is going to elaborate each topic. And he is going to give in a very, very clear discussion. They are more interesting because these are all nutshell. Whatever he has given here is capsule form. Now he is going to elaborate each topic very elaborately in subsequent chapters. So the third chapter corresponding to the Karma Kanda and the second chapter corresponds to the Jnana Kanda. So he has given the entire Vedic teaching in a nutshell, and he is going to talk in the fourth chapter, Jnana Vibhaga Yoga, the Yoga of Systems. He is going to talk about it in more elaborately from the fourth chapter onwards. So when I say the entire Bhagavad Gita is captured here, that doesn't mean we are not going to go through other chapters. We are going to go through all of them. And another thing also, that also doesn't mean that we can stop coming to the class also, because we have to learn it completely. Otherwise, this is only a nutshell jnanam. Nutshell jnanam is good only for summary purposes. But unless we know it elaborately, it won't become part of us. And that is why actually Swami Dayananda, he doesn't teach all these shlokas. He first goes to the chapter of values. He first teaches values first to people. He just talks about the gunatraya, all the three gunas, so that they are all fundamental things. He will teach those chapters first and then come to jnana, all these things. Because traditional teachers, they try to do like that because they will bring the people up slowly. So if I talk from his standing, he can do, but I cannot do that because I cannot tell these are your values, you have to understand that. I cannot tell that to you first. I have to go through this route only. That's why we go through this way of teaching. Yo Vedadau Swara Prokto Vedante Chapratitita.